Tomorrow marks 1 year since Donald Trump was sworn in as the nation's 45th president. In his 16-minute inaugural address, President Trump promised to reverse what he saw as the nation's decline. His message echoed the broad theme of his campaign, Make America Great Again.
We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come.
Joining us now to reflect on Trump's inaugural address is Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Julian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And a year later, what stands out to you about that inaugural address?
Well, he outlined a pretty bleak vision of the United States, and I don't think it's a vision that's changed. A lot of his policies, a lot of his promises have really built off what he said in the inauguration, an effort to attack, to go after the problems that he thinks diminish what the country is and are at the core of the problems that he sees in front of him.
I was in Washington covering that speech, and what you're saying is what a lot of analysts said that day, that it was a very dark speech. At one point, he listed the problems he saw across the country: people trapped in poverty, rusted out factories, scattered like tombstones, and he continued.
And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
How does that phrase, American carnage, resonate a year later?
Well, I mean, in some ways you hear him say that and you hear the way he juxtaposes the problems that many Americans face with then the, problems of crime and immigration. And it makes sense given what he's going to do over the coming year. For him, the problems that he saw were always to be blamed on those issues that he lists. That is the source of the American carnage, rather than people needing economic assistance, people needing better kinds of jobs. And so I think you hear that. I listen to that, and I could almost imagine what's to come. He certainly has been consistent, predictable, and fulfilled a lot of the kind of politics that he promised.
Is part of it, though, strategic? And it's about saying that everything is terrible when I started so that no matter what I do, if things get a little bit better, it looks like I did a good job.
There is an element of that. I mean, he was becoming president when conditions were actually starting to improve as a result of President Obama. So there is a strategic element to that. But I'm not sure it's all strategy. I think a lot of this is ideological. This is his worldview. This is how he sees the country. And I think in that speech, whoever wrote it, whether it was Stephen Miller, Stephen Bannon, whoever actually put the kernels of the ideas in there, that really is how he perceives the country. So I don't think the conditions during which he took over really are the reason that he gave that speech. I think that is the way he sees this country.
What is the purpose of an inaugural address for a new president? Is it supposed to be a list of things you want to do?
No, it's not a laundry list of policies. One thing it does is it sets the tone for your presidency. So often presidents use it to set a tone of optimism and get people excited about what's to come. He obviously took it in a different direction. And the second is just to set the beginning of an agenda, to move from the campaign to the phase of governance and to give the country, not just your supporters, a feel for where you're going to be moving. And so this is a stark contrast to John F. Kennedy's famous inaugural speech, where he was really looking to the best that the country had, whereas Donald Trump, then becoming President Trump, was turning our attention to the dangers that we face.
Well, and one of those dangers, in his view, was a corrupt Washington. And he talked about transferring power out of Washington. Here he is.
For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country.
Julian, he's talked about draining the swamp. Many people would look at the situation now and say it looks swampier than ever.
That's absolutely true. The arguments he's making there probably would gain a lot of support. There's many people who have been frustrated with Washington in both parties, but we have seen no progress over the year in actually dealing with these kinds of issues. There's been no effort to really reform, for example, campaign finance or the way lobbying works. President Trump has set up enormous conflict of interest problems through his own business and his refusal to really, really separate his own earnings and his own industry from the job of governance. And so the swamp remains in place, if you believe it's a swamp. And it's easy to argue that it's become worse over the course of the year, in large part because of the decisions the administration faced. The good news for President Trump is that his supporters are real believers. And even with the fact that the swamp might be worse, many will feel that he has drained it and that he's made it better, regardless of the facts on the ground.
There were comparisons to Ronald Reagan's inaugural speech in 1981 in what Trump was saying. Did you hear Reagan in the speech?
A little bit. I mean, there was a certain amount of pessimism in Reagan, and I think people forget it wasn't all sunny side optimism. He warned of a country that had moved in the wrong direction. He talked about the economy of the 70s as really being debilitating and that we had lost our place in the world after Vietnam. That said, the whole message, the whole direction of what Reagan wanted to do was, in his mind and in the mind of many supporters and even opponents, a new vision, a new agenda, a new kind of market-based, conservative, principled revolution. President Trump doesn't really have that. It's more about the critique than the solution. And I think that's remained true right through to this day.
We have to talk about another phrase that was in the inaugural address and we've heard many times since, and that would be America first. Here he is.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Now, on this one, Julian, many would say he has lived up to that. That has definitely been a very important point in his foreign policy.
He has. He's made a lot of progress. Look, on the domestic front, he's made a lot of progress in deregulating government. And on foreign policy, he has certainly severed or weakened our ties with allies and our place in the international community. The Paris Climate Agreement is something that is no longer what it was when he took office. Our relations with many allies are frayed as a result of the first year. And his rhetoric has been quite bellicose, and it has sent the consistent message that the United States will do what it needs to do based on its own interests. And so that America First principle is something that really is reshaping American foreign policy and has potentially long-term implications for our standing in the world.
So the president is scheduled to deliver his State of the Union address on January 30th. What are you expecting?
Well, he will say the State of the Union is good, and I don't think it will simply be a repeat of American carnage. He's now in a position where he wants to make sure the country understands the economy is doing well, and he will say he is the reason for the economy. But that bleak, darker part of President Trump will still be in that State of the Union speech. And I think on issues like immigration, those will be questions he puts front and center, warnings about what will go wrong if we don't give him the authority to tackle these underlying problems, the underlying illnesses that he sees in the country. And he will not soften on those kinds of positions.
And what do you make of the news that lawmakers, including Congressman John Lewis, are going to boycott the State of the Union?
Not a surprise. President Trump has not simply been a source of partisan division. He is much more than that. There are many Democrats and many Republicans who privately, at least, say he does not embody the values of the country. A lot of what he is saying is antithetical to where the nation should be in 2018. So I'm not surprised that there are some who will boycott. And on the issue of race, there is no issue other than immigration where he has been so divisive. And for an African-American representative who was injured severely in the marches of the civil rights movement of 1965, it makes sense that they might not want to be in the room for that State of the Union address.
That's Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Julian, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.